SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
In Melbourne's north, tucked between a creek and a cul-de-sac, is a suburban footy oval. On a particular autumn night in 2011, Darcy Vesio walked towards that field. Darcy was 18 years old and had just moved from country Victoria to play with the Darebin Falcons, a team in the Victorian Women's Football League.
I remember walking from the car park down towards the oval and looking out, and there were all these women kicking to each other, and they were just kicking perfect drop punts and marking with outstretched arms. And I was just shocked. It was like walking onto another planet. I'd never really seen, like, en masse other people who weren't men with those skills. And, yeah, it was just amazing. It was like an out-of-body experience. And I thought, this is so special. Like, I just had no idea this existed.
I'm Yumi Steins, and you're listening to Seam, a podcast where we celebrate the trailblazers who succeed despite having no role models to lead the way. We start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we record, the Gamarayagal people, Gadigal people, Wurundjeri people, and their elders past and present. When Darcy joined the Victorian Women's Football League, they had low expectations. They'd been a super keen footy player as a kid with real talent, but back then, girls didn't get to play past 14 years old.
I think my parents sort of made sure that it was a soft sort of cushioning around me when I couldn't play anymore. Like, I think they made sure I was really aware entering that year that that would be my final year. And to be fair, I had seen a couple of girls play football before me. Like, there was one girl a year older and another girl 2 years older than me at school, and they'd done the same thing. So that was sort of the pathway I'd seen, and that was completely normal at the time. So I think I remember taking it quite well, but I do remember talking to a guy who was one of the parents when I was playing my last year, and he said that I was really quite distraught. It might have been after the last game or after one of my final games. He said I was crying and really upset, but I have no recollection of it. So, yeah.
This podcast is about people who blaze trails even when there is no trail. And for Darcy, at this point, there was no place for them to exist in football. Sam Kerr wasn't a national hero yet. The Matildas existed but were niche, and Darcy's passion was AFL, not soccer. So as a teen, they refereed adult men's games and played netball. But a friend's dad, who never forgot Darcy's passion for Aussie rules, made sure that Darcy's mum knew that there could be an outlet for Darcy to play footy again once they'd moved to Melbourne.
And I think he gave all the contact details to mum and dad. And my dad got on the phone and spoke to the president there, and my mum drove me down to a training session. And yeah, my teammates remember I rocked up. I was pretty raw, hadn't played for a long time, but mum wrote out my fees there and then. And yeah, I was pretty lucky to have a couple of people pushing me back in to play footy.
And Darcy, what did that feel like to walk out onto the grass again after all that time with a new team?
I still remember the first night. It was like walking onto another planet. It was just amazing. Like, I just had no idea this existed. And then, yeah, from there, like, it was just the best group of people.
Not only did Darcy Vesio go back, they became a marquee player for the AFL Women's, a star, community builder, a record-breaking goal scorer, and a player who went on to fight for the rights of other AFLW players.
The first ever live telecast of a women's AFL game exceeded all expectations last month. Rating at 500,000 nationally, the AFL's game development manager, Simon Lethley, says it validated the push for an AFL women's league.
2017 was the year of the first ever official AFLW game. It's hard to describe how monumental and historic it was. The moment the umpire launched the opening ball into the air, people in the stands were in tears. It was history being played live. The sight of all these players who weren't men wearing their team's colours was profound. Darcy Vesio played that day. They had come a long way from the Bindi-infested sports fields of Wangaratta where they grew up. Tell me about what you liked about football as a kid.
Yeah, I think the ability to be rough wasn't really something that I got anywhere else, you know. I think it is a really unique sport where you learn how to use your body to not only protect yourself but to protect other people. Like, I don't really know any other sports where you physically can put yourself in between your teammate and an opponent and say, like, I'm going to be like a body shield for you. But also on top of that, I think in football, you're able to be loud and boisterous and take up space, not only physically, but like verbally, I suppose. Like, you get to scream and yell. Even the other day, my partner was laughing because I was being just really loud. Like, I was just yelling and I was like, oh, we finished football a month or so ago and I haven't been yelling since then, because at training, you know, you project and it's celebrated and you have to do it. So I think that was always something that drew me to footy.
Just the lack of boundaries, I guess, around be a quiet little person.
Yeah, absolutely. Football's the opposite. It's the louder you are, like, you're more likely to impact the game, get the ball more, and your physicality, like how strong you are, I suppose. And I think even the action of getting knocked down physically and just getting right back up, it's really important.
You know, when you were a kid, you were playing in mixed leagues and I assume some boys' leagues. What do you appreciate about playing in a women's league now that you didn't notice when you were a kid?
There's a few things that I sort of reflect back on. Like, at the time, because I'd only ever played with boys, I remember after the game, we'd go in, the coach would talk, and then pretty much as soon as they'd stop, I would sprint out because I was like, I don't want any of these boys to be uncomfortable. Like, I don't want to see anything. Like, so I'd be out of there and getting changed, just like in a dark little dingy block on my own. So I think looking back, I'm like, oh, that wasn't a great experience. Mm. And I think that is really, like, I know locker room talk gets a lot of, like, negative, I guess, connotations, but, like, growing up, it's a really nice part of sport and, like, it's something I really enjoy now. So
what is it like when you're in that locker room after a win or after a loss? What's the emotions and the, I guess, the bonding experience like?
Yeah, I think it's so special. Whether you win or lose, the locker room is a constant. So if it's after a win, you would have just all sung together. So usually you sing out on the ground for broadcast, but then you come into the locker rooms and you sing together. And that's a really special thing. And that's something I love about football, is that you, if you win, you sing together. Like, I think that's just such a fun concept. And I wish you did it in more aspects of life. Like, if you succeed, you sing. So I love that. I think there's just a lot of, like, little conversations where you're just going around to people and just telling them what they've done really well. Like, just those positive affirmations, or just pointing out moments in the game where you loved that they smothered that ball, or that they got a finger on that ball, or whatever it is, like that they picked someone up off the ground. And it's very, you're very vulnerable and all you have is each other. So it's nice when you can just lean on each other.
Mm. Do you think they're lifelong friends?
I think so. Like, it's funny, it's trade period at the moment. So there's a lot of player movement and, you know, it's funny because we're all very similar sort of people, but we're all put in different teams and that means that we automatically hate each other. But I think I'll look back and they'll be really strong relationships.
It's come up on this podcast that men's football is an unsafe place. There's no players that are out as gay to the world. They might be out to their teammates, but we don't know about that. There's a lot of homophobia. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of racism. Women's football seems completely different to me in that it's super inclusive. Gay and lesbian, non-binary players are supported. Do you have an understanding of that difference that you can share?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty interesting topic and something that a lot of people are very curious about because it's like, how do we exist together under the same umbrella, but we seem to be completely different in the people we attract, I guess, and the way we operate. But I guess the easiest way to break it down is looking at the origins of football in both spaces uniquely. So for men's footy, I guess, at school, like, it's rough, it's hyper-masculine, and it's almost expected for young men to be involved in football if you want to be part of, like, popular groups or the dominant sort of culture. Whereas for women's footy, you know, it's been around for a long time, but it's often existed in the shadows and it's been forged by queer women and gender-diverse people who, you know, didn't care about what society thought of them. They were already rebelling against a lot of what was expected of them in terms of their sexuality and gender. And they created this space where they were going to play footy and, yeah, they just didn't care. Like, people would insult them and they didn't have support, but they just created these little spaces and created leagues and things like that. And from that, eventually we lead into AFLW. So, yeah, that's sort of, I guess, the two different communities of AFLM and AFLW, and that's why they're quite different. But I hope that the injection of AFLW makes the AFL overall feel like a safer space. And, you know, we know statistically that there are gay men playing AFL, and I think it would be a really difficult position for them to be in to feel like. It would feel like a huge weight on their shoulders, I think. But I hope that from us just living and being in that space and demonstrating what it is to live a proud life and the way we support each other gives courage to someone to step out or a group of men to step out. But yeah, I can understand that it's a difficult position to be in.
It's really beautiful to hear you say that because I always picture the young kids that are watching you players and being influenced and looking up to you and idolising you, and I never think about what the men, the male players who are alongside you might be getting in terms of a great influence and how that might be changing their positions.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, I don't know if any of us have really openly shown our support for the male players out there who aren't straight. And I guess it is a position of privilege for us that we've never, like, as soon as I entered women's footy, that was my first experience of seeing people truly embracing and celebrating people of all gender and sexual identities. And I didn't realize I hadn't seen that until I was in it. Like, it was like, oh, like, that's what it feels like. That's what it looks like for people to be able to hold their partner's hand without hesitation, things like that. So I sort of thought, I wonder if we're doing enough to just offer support as well.
Mm. Let's talk about, if you're comfortable to talk about it, about gender identity. Is that all right, Darcy?
Yep.
So for listeners who don't even really understand what that means as an identity, can you help us understand?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I'm still unpacking it and understanding it more as time goes on. But I think for me growing up, like, sexuality was something I'd always been somewhat aware of. and, you know, came out when I was 18 or so as a not straight person. But then it's only been in recent times where gender identity and learning about that, like it kind of was a new concept a few years ago for me. And the more I've been exposed to it and started to understand it, when I used to hear non-binary people talking, I'd used to kind of be like, oh, well, I don't feel like a woman and I have to be a woman. So like, how is that fair? Like there'd be this real like almost like envy or like frustration being like, what? And then after a while, I probably interrogated myself a little bit more around that and was like, oh, like perhaps that's an indication of something. And like for me, the more I thought about what it is to be a woman or how that sort of fits with me, like I sort of saw it as me like opting out of gender a little bit, like and it felt really freeing as well. Like I feel like there are so many things that like rightly or wrongly you attach with being a man or a woman. It just, yeah, felt quite freeing.
Were there any unexpected reactions to you coming out?
I feel like if I didn't feel safe and like I would be supported, like I probably would have just held on to it for a while. But I think I've been really, really fortunate. Like I know a lot of people who are just like me are in spaces where they just can't. And like that's hard. So I feel really fortunate.
In previous interviews, Darcy has said how they didn't want pronouns to complicate things for people around them. And you also said about that you didn't want to be annoying. And I think that's a really interesting way of kind of saying, should I ask people to make adjustments for me?
Yeah, I think that is a big thing for me. Like I didn't want people to look at me differently or to feel uncomfortable referring to me. Yeah, I just hate any sort of annoyance, so I don't want to put people out and to feel like maybe that was going to be an issue for some people, like that felt uncomfortable. But then when I strip it right back, I'm like, if this wasn't inconvenient for people and if people were really good at using pronouns and it didn't feel like uncomfortable in the mouth at times, like where would you be with it? And I'm like, I would absolutely be non-binary. There'd be no like friction or anything for me. So that's how I know I'm really comfortable with it.
We've come a long way in realizing the importance of language when it comes to people's identity. Words matter. But Darcy is incredibly generous.
And do you get stressed if people get it wrong?
No, I don't. I only get stressed if they get stressed. Like for me, it's no issue. Like I think most people try.
And what about your parents? Have they nailed it?
Mum's getting pretty good at it and she's really trying hard in it and it makes me really happy, especially like the gender stuff. Like she probably didn't really understand it that much at first and was like, I don't know what that means, but we'll chat about it when you come home. I was like, okay. But I think when I came out initially, like as not straight, she probably didn't react in the way that she would now. So I think for us, like it's been a really nice healing and like a second chance at being really supportive.
Darcy's mum is Chinese. Her dad is Italian. And this is another instance of the adult kid holding space for the fallibility of their parents and giving them the understanding they need and maybe some time to grow. Author Amy Tunig talks about this in another episode of this podcast. If you haven't listened to it, please do.
I think a lot of the time, like parents, like it's their first time, they fumble and sometimes they fall. But I think it's been a really nice process this time around in her being like, well, this is what you are. What can I do? How can I support you? Like, dad, I'm not sure if dad's fully, like, I think he tries as well, but it's probably just not something he's been exposed to as much. But he's getting there.
He's getting there. Yeah.
They're both very supportive. So
practice, isn't it?
It absolutely is practice.
Did coming out impact your career in any way?
I think that time was quite stressful. It felt really freeing and it did feel powerful to be able to share that. But at the same time, like you are in a more vulnerable position. Like I'm happier and I feel really comfortable. But I know people will come for me, if they feel like just picking on a non-binary person, then, you know, if they spin the wheel, it might be my name that day.
What sort of things are said to you?
It's usually just nasty little comments, really, because you're like in public or whatever, people just write whatever they want, but they don't know. You might just be like at home on the couch with your dog and you open up your phone and it's just there, like that's the notification you're getting. So I think it feels like people are coming for you because you're like in your safe space when you read those comments. They probably think you're like in your football uniform at the club all the time and like feeling really strong. Most of the time you're not. You're just on your phone scrolling like everyone else.
With your guard down.
Yeah, your guard's down. You might be having a nice day and then they'll just say something nasty that makes you question your existence. So it's, yeah, just things like that.
Is the nasty stuff about your game, your playing, or is it something else?
It's usually about belonging in AFLW. And it is a really interesting topic because I think since its inception, like we like love the W and like that's our thing and that's what we're most proud of. And then when you say you're not W, but you're in W, then people are like, what are you doing here?
When you say the W, you mean the word women? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Right.
And I know that I fully belong playing here and that it's not me, it's the W that's the bigger issue, or like the way we just have to have everything in a box. So I think it's difficult for some to compute how you can not identify as that yet take up space there. Like, especially since AFLW's come in, like I've had a sort of a public, I guess, persona or a public presence. And I think people have always sort of known what to expect from me, or even like my social media like presence. Like it's pretty fun and I like to keep it pretty light. And I think for me, I have a pretty good sense of how people will receive it.
Mm.
And I think for coming out, like that was felt like it was very much out of my hands. And like I like people liking me as well. Like I think like I'm a fairly non-controversial figure. And yeah, I don't know if it's phrased right, I like people liking me, but I think I like people enjoying my presence and to feel like maybe that was going to be an issue for some people, like that felt uncomfortable.
Maybe it's liking not being hated.
Yeah, I think I like it when people don't despise me.
Same.
And don't want me dead.
And yet here we are.
Yeah.
In the years since the AFLW's inception, a lot has changed. For starters, the league has grown from 8 to 18 teams. That means every AFL club now has both a men's and a women's team. I asked Darcy, what else has changed?
Yeah, a lot has changed. A big change for us has been the pay. So I think in the first year, like the minimum was around like 8 to 10,000, whereas I think that's sitting around maybe 50 now, which is a huge change.
I noticed that you were part of the negotiation for better pay, one of the active kind of advocates for that, an activist in a way. And I love that because I think it's so tempting to just kind of take the back seat. It feels ugly and scrappy to fight for money and yet so necessary. Tell me about that experience and what you'd recommend for up-and-coming players.
Yeah, that was pretty horrendous experience when it was all happening in 2019, because I was part of a small group who were pushing further than probably what the main group were willing to do. But for me, like, it was really stressful and felt like a big load. But I think from there, it's sort of like set, I guess, a precedent for other players to see that you can stand up for things and you won't die. Like it feels really stressful and like media articles will be written and, you know, people will say that you're greedy or that you're fighting for the wrong things or going about things in the wrong way, which whenever you're pushing for anything, it's always like, it's not what you're doing, it's how you're doing it, which is silly. But I think you have to keep pushing because it would be so easy for the players now to be like, well, you know, our pay is pretty good and, you know, we're getting paid all year round. So, you know, what more could we want? And you look back and see where we've come from in AFLW and women's footy more generally, and you could think that, you know, we've got everything we want. But it's just, it's a good way to stop progress if you go down that path. So, yeah, I think it's easy to sort of think that you don't need to push or that you should just be grateful. But I always think, like, you can be grateful for everything you have and still push further because that's your responsibility as well. Like, you don't just get to step into this space and enjoy everything that other people have fought really hard for.
In some ways, AFLW has evolved a little bit like the men's game did back when it changed from a Victorian league into a national game. There weren't massive sponsorship deals then, and players had to earn a living from another job.
You know, we talk about the balance all the time with working and playing football, but a lot of the time players were just drowning with work and football and not coping well at all. So I think that's been a big shift. And yet for my club, Carlton, like, we changed to training during the day this season. So that's been a real life changer. Like, I think that's probably going to extend a few careers for a few more years, and made us feel like, it shouldn't make us feel more legitimate, but it does when we're not rocking up and training at night when everyone else is at home with their families. So that's been a really big change too.
Wow, I never even thought of that. So you don't have to turn up after work tired. You just show up as per a job.
Yeah, exactly. It's been huge.
I know progress has been made, but what do you feel still needs to be improved for women's sports?
Well, for us in AFLW, it's definitely playing more games. A lot of people don't realise the AFLW season is really short. So there's 18 teams, but we only played 10 rounds. So there's a whole bunch of teams you don't play, which feels really strange. And it's weird that the top level of women's football is the place where you play the least. Like, 10 games is like nothing. You're barely scratching the surface of what your team can do. So I think that makes it really tricky just to get better and to become what we all want to become and what the audience wants and what the sponsors want, what everyone wants. If you look at a men's season, by round 10, things are starting to happen, but not heaps. Like, if you look at Carlton's season, like, they had lost 8 games on the trot and then they turn everything around and somehow make their way to the prelim, and like, everyone's pumped, and they couldn't have had a bigger turnaround. If that was us, we would have finished our season there and then. Like, you don't get a chance at redemption. You don't get to build anything. But yeah, I think the crowd numbers are getting better, and people who would have watched the final series this year, like, that was amazing football to watch. And it's football we haven't seen before. So I feel like every year it's getting better. And people are, I guess, if you watched any of the Matildas this year in the World Cup, people are seeing things and understanding the power of women's sport and how exciting and wonderful it is to watch when you do invest and give it a chance. So, yeah, I feel like the crowds are getting better. People are becoming more involved. And because there are more teams as well, everyone's got skin in the game.
Help me to understand that, Darcy. The Matildas, like, it was such a moment in time, really, for Australian women's sport. What did we see that we hadn't seen? What was revealed that Australia needed to see?
Well, I just remember during the World Cup, everywhere you looked, you saw Matildas, whether it was on TV, watching ads, like, billboards, everything like that. The way they were shown to Australia, and I guess more widely to the world, these players became superheroes to everyone. And it felt like if you weren't watching the Matildas, like, what are you doing?
It was pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah.
For women to be drawn as superheroes, just regular women without makeup and the implants and whatnot.
Yeah, like Sam Kerr's low ponytail capturing the nation. Like, like, is there a more famous Australian silhouette right now? Just the low pony.
Yeah, just the functional hairstyle, yeah. The strong shoulders, the staunch stance. Yeah. And is that, that's the sort of how you like to be represented as well, like just in your strength?
Yeah, absolutely. I think she's just being, and I think there's power in that. You're able to just be and people see that.
What does being seen mean to you, Darcy?
I think being seen to me means being able to talk about who you are and feel like that's embraced and celebrated and not just tolerated. Yeah, and I think it's just being really comfortable in your own skin and knowing that you're loved.
This has been Seen, hosted by me, Yumi Steins. And if you would like to help out the show, please share the podcast with some people that you know would love it. Every listen is a tick, every share is a ringing endorsement, and reviews go a long way to help us get these great stories out there. Seen is an Audiocraft production in collaboration with SBS. From Audiocraft, Season 2 of Scene was produced by Amanda Ewan, Laura Briley Newton and Marcus Costello. Sound design and mix was done by Ravi Gupta and executive producer is Kate Montague. The SBS team are Caroline Gates, Joel Supple, Max Gosford and Mickey Grossman. Our podcast artwork is created by EVO Studios and music is by Yo. Scene's original concept was by Bernadette Phung Nam Nguyen.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.